This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swan hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
What can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddies.
Welcome to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 194. Listen, we're going to talk about that Red Sox series on Netflix because we have to. It's
mandatory.
It's too compelling. Yeah, and we'll talk about the baseball in Tampa, which is a disaster. Talk about disasters. We're going to talk about the Colorado Rockies, who may be worse than last year's White Sox. And then we'll talk about our teams. We want to inverse it. But I will tell you, I did say before this podcast,
speaking about disasters,
that I might crap my pants. I haven't gone to the bathroom all day, and I've been doing my show, and I had meetings, and I'm here doing the podcast. And the next thing John says is that I didn't know that everyone craps their pants in the Boston Marathon.
Well, not everybody, but a fair amount of people apparently do.
Well, I mean, listen, I've done a lot of, I haven't done full Ironmans, but I've done half Ironmans, and like, it happens. Shit happens.
So you were saying before I said we gotta talk about this, actually, you were saying that people make a conscious decision to just let it go and just say, forget it.
I think that there are some people who involuntarily just think it's a fart and they crap and
it's beyond a shark.
But I think there's a lot of people who are like, if I stop, if I find a porta potty and I go, I'll lose 7 minutes. And I don't want to lose 7 minutes.
But if you think about it, if you're going to lose 7 minutes and you're actually at the point where you're going to crap your pants, you're not going to lose 7 minutes. This isn't a sit down, let's read something.
This is something
where you're going to be really going in there. And I would think along the way, there's probably like some flaggers like, all right, a shit station. Like, you know, like a water station. You should be able to get into that.
Well, and then what if you have to go and there isn't access to the porta potty when you have to go? There's a lot of other factors involved. Yeah. But this isn't
like the St. Patrick's Day parade, though. You know, people aren't sitting on top of each other to go to the bathroom.
There are some people who are so exhausted they lose their control.
It's amazing to me, though, that's like, it's a thing. It's amazing to me
Tell people what you and your wife that conversation.
Yeah, so like I was at the Boston Marathon. I was covering it for one of our clients, and I came out like right near the end of it, and I walked out of the inside doing some video work, and it was chaos. Like you couldn't even move. And so I was talking to somebody, and I heard someone say something about, you know, runner, hopefully they didn't crap their pants. And I came back and I said to my wife, who ran the New York City Marathon, and I said, you know, someone said that they crapped their pants at the thing. And she said, yeah, it happens. It happens. It does happen. So unbelievable. But unbeknownst to me.
Yeah, people crap their pants.
Yeah.
This is great. Great start to episode 194. John Senecal, Brian Shackman here. You know, it's hard for me to carve out 50-minute chunks during my day the way life is right now, except on the weekends. And so I've watched you know, most of three episodes, I think, of the Red Sox doc. I didn't want to watch it because I thought it was bullcrap that they decided to do it. I was like, why? They're a last place team. Why are they doing a Hard Knocks-y thing? I was very angry at the team for doing it, right? I just thought it was like priorities are not in the right place. And so I was resistant to trying it. And then your encouragement, I tried it. And I will tell you, it's a strange thing that, first of all, I got to give you some straight reactions. I have to give you. One is, it makes me like Cora more.
Yep.
Okay. It makes me dislike fans more. I really, like, I've never been a booer. I know you I mean, you're an angry dude in general, but the older you get, the happier you get. But, like, you probably are a booer, not to be negative, but I've never been a booer. And maybe the umps or refs a little bit, but even that, I know they're people. I just don't do it, right? And like, some of the stuff, and we just had this incident with Jaren Duran on the road where in Cleveland where he got somebody kicked out. And in Boston, you know, there's, you know, even to Brian Bayo, there's that point where somebody said, I hope you and your family die.
Right.
You know, and even if it's meant to be a drunk joke, I think the fans... And I'm only talking Boston because I'm from there. I had season tickets for 17 years. It disgusts me when people get personal. I cannot believe someone can say, like, when someone says to Cora, like, hey, no trash cans today, like, even if it's 3 years later, I think that's funny,
right?
That's not like saying, like, I hope you die. I hope you kill yourself.
Right.
You're a disastrous human being. Like, to me, that makes me sick. That Boston has a reputation for being that kind of fan. And then the third thing is watching Tristan Casas and Jaren Duran and how they struggle on a pitch-by-pitch basis with self-confidence and with how to pump themselves up. It just shows me, not just them, it makes me feel like there are real issues with mental health in this country. Those guys are so talented and they have to torture themselves every day, every at bat. And baseball's torture when your mind is like that. It's torturous.
Yeah. Obviously the huge takeaway so far, like watching that series, is obviously Jaren Duran, right? He becomes the focus of that, right?
Just because of his admitted suicide attempt.
But, and then you flash forward now to this recent event in Cleveland where, you know, a fan blatantly
came
out and said, I wish you would have taken care of business, you know, the first time. You should have done the deal the first time you tried, when you tried it. So basically saying you should have killed yourself. You know, you don't, obviously that, there's no place for that. I mean, if you're talking about someone who openly, first of all, has the strength to come out, knowing farewell that millions and millions and millions of people are going to watch it, right? Not just Red Sox fans. The word's going to get out and millions of people are going to watch it.
And he has millions of dollars at stake in his future.
Exactly. And he's going to openly say that he put a gun to his head and pulled the trigger. I mean, think about that. Like, that is just beyond, like, comprehension. Like, obviously me, but think about, like, at what point in your life you have to be at to do something like that and be a professional athlete. And then when you watch this docu-series, you can kind of understand how he got that way and how he still struggles with that. And you got to think that the person who said it was drunk, and he obviously probably didn't see the series. He probably just heard about it.
Either way,
just spouted off because he's an idiot. Because I don't see how anyone, even drunk, could watch this. And I watched the whole thing and turn around A, and say that as a human being, but B, watch Jaren Duran and how he progresses through this series and the person that he is, and come out and say that. I don't care how drunk you are. You got to be a complete piece of shit to do that.
Totally.
You know, for someone like Jaren Duran to struggle with the day-to-day stuff of Major League Baseball, the day-to-day stuff of his mental health, and then walk out after every single home game and sign autographs for everyone behind the stadium and do that every night and have those kind of friendships. And, like, you know, obviously that becomes part of him, right? You know, that's part of his DNA because that's what he needs to get through his life, right?
Yeah.
But.
And he's living alone in Waltham, which is on the outskirts of the city.
Exactly.
And his place is just a place to sleep. Tristan Casas lives in a hotel. I'm sure he's changed the situation, but lives in a hotel by himself. And these are young kids. And
with nothing but time by themselves a lot of times on their hands.
It's really
disgusting.
Rough.
My son watched it too. Huge Yankee fans, me and my son, obviously. But he said, huge fan now of Jaren Duran, he said, even after the stuff that happened with him on the field last season. And more appreciation of Tristan Casas. And I think he said, you know, just because I think, again, complex human being, right? Painting the fingers and just doing weird stuff, laying in the grass, you know, without his shoes on. He's a different beast, right? But he's a talented beast. And you wonder if he'll ever tap into that potential.
Yeah, I mean, you forget. I mean, the thing with Casas that I think about is that what if I was maturing in real time in front of everybody or a lot of people? And like the things that I did and thought when I was 22, 23, and 24, I don't know that I'd be better. You know, self-awareness has always been a challenge for me. And he annoys me. Like Casas, when he chimed in on the Devers thing and was basically like, Rafi should be able to pick where he plays, it was so out of line and so dumb that it made me just so annoyed with him. And I just feel like I don't know where ego in the thing you just watch the series, you see his insecurities. But the thing is that he's got to make mistakes in real time. And so I actually judge people less sometimes when they're younger, because I remember what I was like and how irresponsible I was at that age, and they are under microscopes every single day, and they're not going out and hooking up every night and drinking every night, and they're not.
No, they're a business. They're literally a business. Their body's a business.
And so I tend to agree. I just think that they should be counseled better in terms of knowing their limitations and sort of figuring that out. I mean, I love the fact that Casas walks to the hotel, although he stayed at the Hotel Commonwealth. It's literally like right across.
I mean, he's an interesting guy too, because, you know, I had read a thing where, you know, at the beginning of this whole Rafi Devers situation, you know, he was obviously struggling too. And they said to him, you know, what do you do when you struggle? He goes, well, I go hang out with Rafi because misery loves company. So he says a lot of weird stuff. We know that. But I'll say another thing about Casas. When I was up at Fenway a few weeks ago and I was down in the field doing the first pitch.
Did you go talk to him?
No, I sent you the picture of him. I sent you guys a picture of him. And he was, you know, you have on the field access and there's people behind the thing and they can get autographs. He went over after his BP and he signed, He had to have signed for a good 10 minutes. And I've been to a lot of those on-field things, and I've met players, and I've been there as guests of players.
It's usually tough to get them.
It's usually tough to get them, even if you know players, right? And they don't usually hang around long. It's a couple things, and they're gone. And I don't know if it was, you know, a fan, you know, a PR move in his own mind, or if he's always like that, because I haven't seen him. But I would tend to think that just based on him and watching him in that docuseries, that might be his personality. So hats off to him.
Yeah, and the last thing I would say, I mean, I talk about this all day and I haven't even finished watching it. Being bilingual is so important in today's game. Okay, that's one thing. Second thing is, like, a guy like Brian Bello, who I didn't even know, and it's he displays a lot of that too, like trying to pump himself up. But I think that with, like, Americans or English speaking, sometimes we don't, because of the language barrier, we think that they don't care as much or something like that. I don't know if this is, like, I'm not trying to, this isn't racist. I just don't, you can't access their emotions sometimes the way they speak because I don't know the cadences of the language, right? And so with the subtitles and with Brian Bello in between innings, you know he cares.
Yeah.
And it might be self-interested care, like he wants to do well for himself. But either way, like when he doesn't do well, like when Durant dropped that ball on the opening, I was there.
Yeah.
I was at that game. And it's amazing that one mistake, it did lose the game.
Yeah, and he walks down in the runway and he curses him out. And,
he
curses
pissed.
Himself out because he did something two pitches before. So you know the passion.
Right.
It's crazy.
And so the fact that he cared, but also it's like baseball is cruel. That game was excruciating because you really left the game feeling like if he had caught that ball, the whole game would have been different. Then you feel like
if he had caught that ball, the whole game would have been different.
No, but it's true. But it's true.
I know it's true. Game 5 of the World Series. Of course it's true. I want to say another thing about Brian Bello, right? Another thing is you got to take into account, he pitched that whole season basically without his family, his wife and kid.
Yeah.
And like, think about that.
It's so
like
hard.
He's trying to come back from injury. He's trying to perform to a contract, and he's trying to perform at the highest level without his wife and his newborn child.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So I mean it's crazy.
There's a whole plethora of stuff.
So it's worth it. I mean, the bottom line is as much as you think that. I mean, I'm so down on the Sox. It's not even funny. We talked last week about Trevor Story, right? I mean, like I feel like as long as he's healthy, they can't be terrible. And I think it's kind of bearing itself out. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is episode 194 of Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. The next order of next up for bid is Orlando and Tampa. We've stated many times on the show, I don't believe Major League Baseball should be in Florida, right? But it definitely shouldn't be in Tampa. And you're telling me that Orlando would be better. So, and there's prospective buyers. that would move the team to Orlando and build a stadium?
So there's plans like Orlando Dreamers Baseball, right? There's been talk since 2019, I believe, about bringing a team there. There's a group in place, just like in Nashville, just like in Portland, just like in Salt Lake City, where there's groups in place. Now there's renderings of a stadium, looks really cool. They want to build it down by SeaWorld. The flip thing here is what you're dealing with, and what you and I kind of talked about a little bit beforehand. It's almost like a Las Vegas scenario, right? But this is the biggest travel destination in the United States. There are 80 million people annually going there. So like you said, it could be locals, it could be tourists, but there's a constant stream of people. Now there's funding secured, like $1.5 billion to hopefully, you know, start the stadium, start the process of getting a team. Maybe it's Tampa. They're working on private funding. There's the same guy, Pat Williams, who brought the Orlando Magic to the area, is in on this. Barry Larkin's like the MLB ambassador to it. So it's in there. There's a plan in the works.
Does Tampa want to sell?
That's the problem. Now there's a cry for Tampa. The owner is Stu Steinberg or something like that to sell the team. Rob Manfred's adamant about baseball staying in Tampa. I guess I don't know if he said Tampa or Florida. You know, I think given the circumstances in Tampa, right? Roof falling off, all this other issues.
Nobody goes,
right? The plan would be to build a 45,000-seat stadium in Orlando.
Still a little too big.
Glass roof, like this whole new glass architecture, I think, is the new wave of the future. But again, constant revenue stream. But I think the plan would be to hopefully entice to buy Tampa and move them there. That would be the easy thing, right? But still, you have to build a stadium somewhere. Yep. And it has to be probably 3 years. And
if you want to expand, you could expand there in Nashville, maybe. But I don't think Major League Baseball belongs in Florida. And I think that the transient element of the tourism in Orlando isn't great for fan bases, because then you end up getting a couple thousand people a game are going who don't give a crap about the home team, which it puts fans in seats and it gets revenue, but it might not necessarily help the team, you know, on the field. But Orlando is way more viable than Tampa.
Way better location,
so,
as far as people.
In
yes.
So many different ways. And so I'm not saying I could be convinced, but I tell you, Miami, which I think is a crap salad sports town, just like I think Atlanta is, I just think it's not a good sports town. And their people fight me on it. The best team in that town, even better than the Dolphins, is the Panthers.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think baseball.
And you're going to these games, like you're going to go to Lone Depot Park, I think that's what it's called, right? And it's going to be like 6,500 people there.
It's a joke. And the thing is, what I was fascinated by, yeah, it takes me back to the series, is like even like New York and Fenway, it's just the fans are different. And even if the crowd might be a little smaller, the fans care, and it'll never be that small. And I just, you know, I just wonder what life is like in other towns. Cause I've always wondered if I lived in Kansas City and I would get 81 games, cause it'd be for a third of the price of a Fenway. What would it be like to go every game and have it be so thin? I don't know.
Thin and are accessible, right? Cheap and accessible.
But thin. But like,
just the like pure fact that maybe you could just drive up to the stadium and go to a game, right? Instead of like the chaos that is Fenway Park or Yankee Stadium, getting in and out and trying, spending $1,800.
I just wonder if I'd like it as much, though. You know, like Fenway is an experience. I mean, it is. You've even noticed it even on crappy like attendance nights. Like the streets and the bars, I mean, there's an energy there that's different.
Yeah.
And it's different even than Yankee Stadium.
Well, you
got to
play. Exactly. Matt and I were talking about that. It's a whole outdoor experience.
Our producer, Matt's right.
Yeah, the whole outdoor experience that the Yankee Stadium lacks that Fenway has. But you talk about these teams and like what they're drawing, and then you talk about expansion and relocation, and you know, MLB, Rob Manfred wants expansion. He's going to want to see it in his term, right? That's going to be one of his claim to fame. And he has to figure out, he's already figured out part A with Oakland moving to Las Vegas, but they got to figure out what the heck's going to happen with Tampa. And then you look at a team like Colorado, who is literally like could be on track to be the worst team in Major League Baseball. And how do you convince fans to show up to their
And they have a 58,000 seat stadium.
And a beautiful stadium. And a, you know, I say what you want. I mean, tell me there's not a flow of people coming in and out of Denver.
Denver's a great sports town.
But what do you do with that team? Like, do you hope for the best and within 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, you can do a relocation or add teams and restructure the divisions? Because, or do you look at 5 years from now, baseball in Colorado has run its course. You got there in, what was it, like 1993? Yep. And then you run your course. You can't compete. You can't get pitching there. You're never going to be able to have a team that's going to compete, A, in that division, B, with any other team in Major League Baseball.
Right. So we talked about this last week about how part of their problem is that they're unlucky that they're in a division with four teams that could win a World Series, right? I mean, let's face it. Arizona, San Diego, LA, and San Francisco are all excellent teams. Now, and your point is the interesting point to move that conversation forward. I mean, listen, for people, obviously, if you listen to this podcast, you've gotten this far into the podcast, you know baseball. You know the air is thin, the ball travels, and pitchers don't want to pitch there because it inflates their numbers. You have to overpay to get people there, and so on and so forth. Now, the thing to move it forward is the only way to do this, and who's to say in 20 years whether the Dodgers, Giants, and Padres, and Diamondbacks will all be good, right? This could be just a three-year stretch, and a couple of them might go back in the tank. So maybe.
But history says you're not good in Colorado.
Right. They've made it to the Sox beat them in one of the World Series, yep. I think. But they've obviously never won it. But the only way to maybe realign it would be through expansion. I think that's a very good point, that if you add two teams, then you probably have enough to peel off something. Or add them somewhere else. I mean, to really create a fourth division in each league, you need at least four more teams probably. But I don't know. I think that's an interesting thing if you had all four team divisions. I don't know. Like Colorado, as of Tuesday, has four wins and 24 losses.
And they're on pace. If you know, if you play these stupid on pace numbers and Aaron Judge is on pace, hit 172 home runs.
Especially in April.
Exactly.
Late April.
But knowing how bad they are and what's in front of them and the division they're in, they're on pace to win 23 games.
That's insane.
23 games. So let's do a bold prediction.
Remember the Reds
right now
went like 0-something and then they ended up like
I almost feel like we got to check the odds on this and see what the odds are. Like, are they running odds in Vegas? Will they win 30 games? Like, let's take our pick. Will the Colorado Rockies.
Is the 30 is your over-under?
Will the Colorado Rockies win 30 games this year?
Yes, they will.
Now, think about it. Like, what was it last year in 2024, the White Sox won like 50 games or something like that, 51 or 52 games. Like, they lost 110 games or something like that.
I thought it was last year.
Yeah, last year, 2024. Yeah. Think about that, dude. If you only win 30 games, that's only almost you only win half of what they won.
They won 41. They went 41 and 121 last year.
All right, 41.
Their run differential. Get this. Take a guess at what the run differential was for the White Sox last year.
Oh God, like negative 400.
300.
Wow.
And the next worst was Colorado at 247.
All right. Well, that might flip this year then. And Colorado might.
I mean,
this is
Colorado only won 61 last year. So
Colorado's sitting at negative 72 right now. Run differential.
It is. So you want to say. You're gonna set the over under 30?
30.
Matt, what are you gonna take? Over or the under? You're not even listening. You got the over? I'll take the over. I'll give you 35. I'll give you 35 and I'll still take the over.
35 and the over. We're gonna bump it to 35. I'll say
and we're bucket of wings at J Timps.
All right, 35. I say they don't win 35.
You say the under. You still taking the over at 35, Matt? It's 45 and a half on FanDuel.
It's 45 and a half on FanDuel. Wow. So maybe we should take this. Maybe we should make a bet on it. Why don't we pull our money together and we'll put like a bet on it instead? Right?
Well, 45 is that's different than you started at 30. I gave you 35.
We'll
based on
under.
That line, I'd take 40. I'd go to 40. Do you want to take the under on 45?
So basically they're saying they're going to be better than the White Sox. Mm-hmm. At this point, they're saying they're better than the 2024 White Sox. If we're going to go,
Matt, would you take the under on 45? Okay, Matt says yes.
I would
so
take
you
it definitely
do,
on 45.
You want to do $10 each? What is the what does it win us? I got to pay for college, so I can't do too much. You want to
check on the revenue.
What's the payoff? Oh, so forget it. So the good money's on the over.
Yeah, no one thinks they're going to do it. This is how it works.
It's a crappy bet.
Freaking scam artist.
It's a crappy bet. We got to find.
All right, I'm going with my 30. Screw it. They ain't going to win
still
more than 30.
I'm taking the over.
All right,
and you want to bet a bucket?
Oh, now we're betting a bucket?
Yeah,
we just went from winning nothing to like
no,
bucket's like 50 bucks.
No, it's between me and you. I'll give you 30. Bucket. I'll give you 35.
35.
And whoever I'm taking the over, and whoever loses buys a bucket of wings.
Clint Hurdle, you better get these guys in business, man.
You taking it? Are you taking it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Clint Hurdle, right. Figure these clowns out and get them hitting.
He's John Senecal. If he drank, I'd say he's drunk, but the last 3 weeks he's been on fire. Maybe it's too much caffeine. Episode 194 of Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Let's talk about our guys for a second. I'll let you go first.
Okay.
Closer?
So,
you want to talk closer?
Yeah, you got to talk about the Devin Williams meltdowns and the confidence thing. You know, this is what I will say about that. Everything's right there. The writing's on the wall. The good thing that we have going for us, when I say we, say the Yankees, this year is that you have someone that you know can close behind you. Last year, Clay Holmes, until they figured out Luke Weaver was a viable option, Boone kept going to Holmes because he figured that was his only option, which led to a lot of issues for the Yankees. So that being said, I'm glad Boone has nipped it in the bud quickly, and hopefully Devin Williams will get a little boost of confidence and realize, you know, this is New York, and you gotta sack it up, and you have the talent, and maybe this non-closer role will give him the confidence he needs to get back and use his stuff and be confident with his stuff. Other than that, Aaron Judge, I think he went 2 for 5 and dropped his average to .407 last game. Still need that lower third of the order to hit.
Yeah, they've been terrible.
Lower two-thirds of the order to hit. You know, Bellinger is very disappointing. Jazz is disappointing. Quietly, Dominguez is doing okay. So we'll see. I mean, you know, the bullpen's been great. Again, starting pitching a little, we'll see. I'm worried about Bellinger. I think there's something going on. He doesn't act like he's hurt, but history says when he doesn't play well, he gets hurt. And I feel like he dove early in the season diving into a base, and he might have hurt his back a little bit, and he missed a couple games there, like early on. But, you know, like, we're basically 30 games in the season, so.
I think that the question only would ask is that based on what you see, with what they have in the closer dynamic, regardless of what happens, is it enough to win?
Yeah, I do, because I feel like right now they have Fernando Cruz is pitching very well, and they got Jonathan Loaisiga coming back. So that's going to be encouraging. As long as he stays on track with his rehab, he should be back very soon. And he's a force out of the bullpen, close to 100 miles an hour. And those, you know, those scrappy guys, you know, like the Ryan Yarbroughs, they've done their job, you know, and Tim Hill has been like, since plucking that guy from the White Sox has been awesome last year. So I'm not so much worried about the bullpen because, like I said before, they know more this year what they got going in. So, you know, at least Luke Weaver can close games, and he's done it in high pressure situations.
Now, in terms of the Red Sox, I'm just sort of waiting. Like, they sort of like flirt with going 5-6 above 500, and then they go on some sort of little slide. And I think of Moneyball, you know, when he goes into the owner's office, you just need to be 7 out, you know, and that's all they want. Like, if the Red Sox can stay within 3 or 4 games of first place, I'm through the All-Star break or through June, I'm actually okay with that. I really don't know what to make of Devers and Casas and what to do. I mean, you know, Campbell's been good. Duran, he's been hot and cold, but I mean, he's still, when he's on base, he's a game changer, and Bregman and Story give you everything you expect them to give. So I think there's a lot to be encouraged about, but they can't seem to put it all together at the same time. And I would argue if you can't figure it out, someone's going to get hurt, right? Yeah. I mean, and someone's going to get hurt, and then it's going to be interesting. Like, I wonder, were you there long enough to see if Devers took any ground balls?
No.
Like, I'm wondering if he's doing anything in the field or if he's totally given up. Like, I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, I didn't see him out there. I mean, I really wasn't totally paying attention, but they weren't doing ground balls when I was there. It was the end of their hitting, and then White Sox hit. The thing interesting about the Red Sox is, you know, Duran, he's been hot and cold, but he's been more hot lately. But the thing about him is you got to play him because with his speed, you know, speed kills. You can't defend against that. And if the guy
don't slump, don't they say that in the show or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, he's been getting on base, and you have to have that, right? And when he gets on base, he's dangerous. I mean, the dude stole home again.
Yeah,
you know,
awesome.
Straight steal home. I mean, how many players can say they've done that? Not many, dude. Yeah. So like that is something you can't teach. So interesting dynamic with the Red Sox and Jaron Duran, because like
you've watched him 3 times in person.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we talked about earlier, you know, he's got a lot of issues with his mental health, and he's also a seriously talented player. So we'll see how the Red Sox stick by him, and if they lock him up, you never know.
Yeah, you wonder. I mean, there's that one in episode, I think it's episode 2, when his car breaks down, and Costas is like saying, don't mess with your car. Those are $100 million hands.
Yeah.
And he says, come on, give me a break. And, you know, I just wonder, because we don't see everything. We don't see his interactions with agents and stuff like that. The one thing I'll say as a dad, you know, and again, it takes, I read the Agassi book open, and his dad was relentless and brutal, and he hated his dad, and he hated tennis, and then he ends up late in life reconnecting with his dad and understanding a little bit. But it's like, with Duran, it's just like, you wish it, like his mom or dad like hugged him a little more, you know what I mean? It just feels like
crazy parent dynamic.
It just seems like he just needs a hug,
yeah.
You know, and like someone to love him. I hate to be so cheesy, but like, that's all I was thinking about. It's like, maybe the parents needed to be like that to make him great. I don't know. But at the same time, like, the kid just wants a hug.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I feel like that would make a lot of difference.
Yeah, his dad obviously, you know, was tough on him, and he admits his faults in the docuseries. But at the same time, you know, I don't think it's a very hugging family. You know
what I mean? Yeah.
So there's not many hugs to go around regardless.
But maybe that's what, maybe I hug my kid too much, right. And that's why he's not in Major League Baseball.
How reformed you've become. You know, so.
I mean, I've always go, you know, like, how tough should you be on your kid if they have some talent? Like, I run into that with my youngest. He's got talent and he's lazy, and I don't, like, what do I do? Like,
it's hard, man. I really pick my battles, because our big thing is baseball, and baseball's hard, man. It's hard mentally, and you go through tons of struggles, especially on short seasons, especially in the Northeast. So the one thing I've learned with my kids, I practice it from day one with T-ball, is I never start a conversation after a game with a negative. And I usually hardly ever go to the negative during any of the conversation within like the first day. I usually wait for something to come up like the second day and use that to say something like, oh, hey, you remember like that last game when you did this? Yeah. Oh, that's the same thing you're doing now. Yeah. And it seemed to have worked. And it's worked for me for 18 years.
I think it's a good lesson. I probably could benefit from that. I appreciate that, John, as always. Thank you, John. Great stuff. Really, really good. John Senecal, Brian Shackman, you've been listening to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.
Going up these days, it feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.